Maybe we could just start with a moment of prayer and asking God to continue to bless us as we reflect on the Holy Word and see whatever word that God wishes to speak to us this day. Continue to speak to you and to us this day. I was thinking about, again, I just found actually just this morning, actually, I just found these beautiful quotes from St. Benedict. And so I thought, well, this is, and so I wish it said, dear brothers and sisters, but you understand the idea. And he says, what, dear brothers, is more delightful than the voice of the Lord calling to us? In a very real way, of course, that's what this is about, and more delightful, because really that word Habibi relates to you are precious in my eyes, I love you, you are mine, you are my delight, Scripture says, Isaiah says. And so the more we can open our hearts to really hear that word that is the heart of God speaking to us, the more that we understand the magnificence of what this is all about. And so, again, in terms of living this mystery, of the Paschal mystery, as I said this morning, the basis of it, I've come to understand, I didn't always see it this way, but the very basis, the heart of it all, is to understand who you are. That's what it's all about. Do you and I understand who we really are? Because if we do, then that's the absolute good news that fills our life, fills the world, that we live, that we proclaim, that we share with everyone. So it's sort of the basis of it all, the Habibi. But from that, once we understand it, once we deeply understand that and accept it, and like the young woman I was telling you about from Boston, are able to say, despite the world saying to us over and over again, you're not this, you're not that, you're, and especially this horrendous categories, which I basically, for many years, I never heard them because I was basically in an Hispanic environment. These are not categories that are there. But I've heard more and more is winners and losers. There's probably nothing more antithetical to the gospel than that expression. You're a winner. She's a loser. She's a loser. She's a winner. You're a loser. It's absolutely, totally contrary to the gospel. Because the whole gospel message is you are more than winners. You are the beloved. And people act in a negative, ugly way basically because they don't know that. That's what makes people act in an ugly way.
Sometimes I play devil's advocate.
Yes, please do. What
do you call people who are condemned to hell? You would call them losers, though, right?
No, I think my own sense, I would say they've lost a lot, but I would call them losers. I think, as a matter of fact, I think that's an excellent question, because that's always the question of this, is that the people I think who are condemned to hell, God must weep because of that. God must weep because people choose the wrong. Because then we have the opportunity to decide who we will believe. And if God's crying out to us, you are my beloved, and we say, either I don't care, or...
When you were speaking this morning, I was thinking how in our society now there's a lot, so much division, but there's this term now, like the 1%, the 10%, like, you know, the elite, that all, like there's this quote, like, like, you know, 1% owns like 50% of everything. And it just seems like, I don't remember that being such a part of our society years ago. Yes, there were always richer people, but now it's like you want to be in the 1%, the 10%, and then everybody else, well, you're nothing. It's kind of like, I'm everything and you're nothing. Maybe they don't say it that way, but it's kind of implied.
I think that's, and it throws, even for the people in the 0.1%,
right,
it throws everybody off. Mm-hmm. You know, I often wondered, you know, because many years I've lived and worked in the different Latin American communities and here and outside the country and all that. And what time, and I have a friend who I went to the seminary with, he left the seminary and he became exceedingly wealthy. And is definitely a part of that 0.1%. He's a good man. He was an attorney and this, that, and the other thing. So I said to him one day, I was having lunch with him, and I said, Joe, I said, tell me something. I said, you know, one thing I could never quite understand. In Mexico, because I knew a lot of it, I've been oftentimes in Mexico. In Mexico, everybody knows the president of Mexico is going to, at least that was in the old days, is going to steal at least $500 million. I mean, that's just part of the deal. That's why you're elected, so you're going to get $500 million. But then that seems to be not enough. Then they want to, now the presidents are trying to steal $1 billion or $1.5 billion. And then people start to get upset. It's like out of control, you know? I said, well, because $500 million, I mean, that should be enough to live very well with and to be able to sustain your family very well. And, you know, for, I said, what is it? What's going on in that? And he said, oh, it's very simple. I can tell you exactly what it is. I said, well, what is it? He says, if somebody has $2 billion, they look at Bill Gates and they say, he has $10 billion. And that's what I want. Yeah. I want 11 billion.
Yeah.
And so as a consequence, it creates this incredibly illusionary and destructive world. Mm-hmm. Because the people that get the 11 billion, you know, you all know, I'm sure with the people you know or the people I've come to know through the years, emptiness. Mm-hmm. There's just emptiness and upset. It's not something that makes a person happy. It really isn't. So it is, it's all that mentality of, whereas if we understood and live and would allow the gospel message to be what we illuminates our path, well then, yes, you know, I mean, of course, you know, if you make $1 million and you're $5-10 million, well, great, that's good. Then what do you have? Now you have this gift that you can use for your family and make sure that everybody's provided for you and those that you're really responsible for, and put aside part for that group that really needs it. And it doesn't have to be, it's not like communism or socialism, it's just knowing that these, and every human being is a beautiful child of God. Every single human being is a beautiful child of God.
Some of the very rich people have used their wealth and leveraged governments, as Bill and Melinda Gates. People may not know what their religious beliefs are, but their social beliefs are wonderful in what I've seen them do.
Yes.
And
well, John, it's interesting too. I don't know Bill and Melinda, but it's interesting that Bill Gates had no social consciousness growing up. I mean, in the beginning of it. Mm-hmm. But Melinda Gates, when he married Melinda, she's a very practicing active Catholic. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she's the one that brought that to him, apparently. Mm-hmm. Apparently, I don't know. Yeah. It's sort of like what he got through her. He got this message. So well, what I'd like to talk a little bit about just briefly this afternoon and then leave you time to think and pray, and then I think we're going to. You are very, very, very patient because you're getting three conferences. That's Kristen's fault.
No, wait, for the record.
Most people only put two.
For the record, it's Don Brennan's fault because this was his schedule that we used to follow before, so I'm just continuing on. So it's not even me.
Kristen is to blame.
Continuing on.
So I just had a little reflection. I just wanted to share with you about, like, well, how does this play out in terms of living the Paschal mystery? That's the basis of the Paschal mystery. How does this play out? And I think one of the things that helps us to understand is that sort of strange parable, for years I never understood it, is the salt of the earth. Or it's not even a parable. It's when Jesus says in the Gospel of Matthew, you are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its taste, with what can it be seasoned? It is no longer good for anything but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its taste, with what can it be seasoned? It is no longer good for anything but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. And for for almost until about last year, I've been ordained 43 years, I was a deacon before that, 44 years, supposedly preaching, and I could never figure out what this meant. But for, salt is good, but all this trampling. Well, I finally read something that explains what Jesus was, it might have been before, I don't know, but that explains what this means. And it comes down to this. That is a community clay oven that would have been common like in Nazareth. That's what they would have had in Nazareth. And what it is that they built in those little towns, in those little pueblos like Nazareth, these clay ovens, just almost exactly like that. In fact, that they still have them apparently in many places today. And then what they do is they put in this shelf here. And that shelf is where, of course, the food that they're cooking and all that goes in. And then this is the secret. How do you heat the oven? Well, the oven is heated in this way. Blocks of salt.
Wow.
What they do is they take these big blocks of salt, that was the very valuable thing in those days. They put them, they would shove them under the oven in the heating thing. And of course I didn't know any of this, but apparently if you heat salt at least in this format, and like they would put kindling wood therein, then they would light it. And then apparently what salt does, after it's sort of like incense, sort of like the charcoals, I guess, mm-hmm. that you use for incense, mm-hmm. once it's sort of lit, it sort of goes into a quiet state, and it becomes more and more hot. And it's like a source of heat, and it can get very hot. Mm-hmm. And so that was what heated the oven that allowed them to cook everything. And what happened is, of course, that would last only a certain amount of time. And then once they lost their energy, like I guess a charcoal or something like that, once it lost its energy, in those days they had, they had roads, but they were all roads made out of dirt and mud. In the muddy seasons, the roads would become almost impassable. So what they would do is they would take these blocks of salt out from underneath the oven and throw them out onto the path. And therefore, people would trample on them. That's where the people would walk. But it had no power to do anything. So it lost its flavor, it's lost its power to create
thank
good.
You so, much.
So, thank you, sister. Thank you. So if the salt maintains its strength, it has incredible power. And for example, very practical. Oops. Oh no, let's go back here. Salt with the power has the ability to bake bread, and these are all Middle Eastern dishes. Make these delicious looking foods. I mean, somebody else makes them, but then they cook them. It can create all of this goodness and this variety. that nourishes people, that gives life to the world. In fact, it's what nourished the Pueblo, it's what nourished the town. Exactly the ability of the salt to heat the oven, which then in turn became the source of this, of food and nourishment for the whole town and for everyone. Well, in a very real way, that's what happens when we know who we are. When the whole community of God's people called together understand we are the Habibi, it doesn't create, well, we're the winners and you're the losers, as you know, as Father, you were asking. I'm sorry, you're a loser out there. It doesn't create that mentality, because that's contrary to the message of Jesus. Jesus went with the sinners and the tax collectors and the publicans, and what did he do? He told them, you are beloved. And that's the only thing that changes people's hearts. When they know that they're loved, they can be changed. I worked for many years in gangs out in Los Angeles, and I was always amazed that, you know, you see these guys with the teardrops here, you know, and the whole thing. And I think the one that I always remember the clearest among many others, but was this young kid, Matthew, and he was only 15 years old, but he had teardrops here, which meant that he'd done some bad stuff, and all that sort of stuff. And he got knifed very badly in an attack one day. And so he was in the, and he was one of 10 children. The mother had just suddenly walked out on the family. So suddenly they had, his father was just trying to do what he could to keep his family afloat. He had to work all the time, and so obviously the kids started to, and then of course the sense of, see, in terms of Habibi, what does the message say to these children in a Spanish community? Your mother left you. That's like, wow. You are nothing. You are nothing. That's the message. You're worse than nothing. And so that's the message this poor kid had gotten. And so what he did, he united to this gang where they call each other homeboys and homegirls.
Homies.
They're part of the family. They're part of this extended family, and they get a new name, just like in religious life. You know, slingers or whatever. But the thing is that, so I went in to see Mateo into the hospital when I went in to see him, and he was in there because he was 15 years old. They put him in the children's ward, because it was sort of like a ward and all that. So I walked in, and it was around Christmas time, because I walked into this sort of place, and there's Mateo in one of the beds over there. And he had this balloon tied to his bed that said, Merry Christmas. And then next to his bed, he had like this little Christmas tree that, with the, you know, I candy or something. Excuse me, one second. I'm not going to answer this. I'm just going to have to turn it off. And he had like candy on it or something. And so I came up to him, I said, well, Mateo, what's going on? He said, oh, Father. He said, you wouldn't believe it. I said, what's that? He said, man, he says, yesterday, all these nice people came, and they gave us balloons, and they gave us this Christmas tree, and got this candy here. And then it's happened. And then he looks at me with these teardrops and the tattoos and all that. He said, and you know what? I said, what's that, Mateo? He said, tomorrow, Santa Claus is coming. Santa Claus is coming. See, Mateo didn't have to be told he was a bad character. He knew he was doing a lot of bad things. But what he didn't know was that he was beloved. Mm-hmm. It's only when he would know that he was beloved that he could possibly really change. And that's what brings nourishment and peace and hope to people. You know, So, and that's the good news. That is the good news. Not because you're so good does God love you, but precisely God loves you just where you are, as you are. That's who God loves. And so as a consequence, when we look at the parable from that point of view, I have the parable explained, but this is just my perception or my understanding, is that the salt, in the imagery, that salt is to know myself as beloved, the Habibi of God. That's sort of the heart of the message. Without that, it's just doctrine. Remember Benedict says, it's delightful when you hear the voice of God. Delight, you are my delight. That's what Benedict's talking about. I wouldn't dare say that's what Benedict's talking about, but Yahweh is a Benedict and Father of Benedict. But I think that's what he's talking about. Certainly it's an element of what he's talking about. So the first thing is the salt itself is to know who you are and that you are the beloved of God. The second thing is the action of the salt. When I know myself as beloved, that creates a fire of love. When I know that I'm beloved, I love. That's what we do when we really know. It's hard for, if you know you're really loved by somebody. I mean, people can do it. We can do it to each other. But if you really know somebody really loves you, it's hard not to love them back. It's a difficult trial. I don't even know if it's quite possible. Probably possible, but it's not probable. So, and that the union of love that it can be created creates goodness. But that's what creates the fire. It's the unity between the beloved and the lover, the lover and the beloved. And then once that is there, then the bread, the meals, that which it, if the salt loses its savor, what is it good for? But if it keeps its savor, sabor, then the heat of love creates power, frees the power for good that allows for solution to numerous challenges. Once we all know, as you were saying so beautifully, that we're not winners and losers, that is the most ugly, insane way of looking at life. Winners and losers. And it creates hate. It creates violence. Because when a person thinks that they're not the Habibi, but they're a loser, then that's when people say, well, the hell with you. I'll do to you what I think. I'll tell you who I think you are. It just creates the ugliest possible scenarios. Whereas once people know they're beloved, even though they're in terrible situations, something radically changes within them and they become an agent for good. An agent for good. Agent for good. So that's at least one way. And what is the result? How does that play out in life? Well, it seems to me that there's several things. Of course, we have the example of our Holy Father Francis, and these are Muslim refugees. He went, and he washed the feet of the Muslim refugees. Mm-hmm. What's he saying? You are my brothers, you are my sisters. Mm-hmm. I don't care what you've done, not done, who you are, what country you come from, where you were, you're the beloved. And that's what but you have to do that, you have to know who you are. Because otherwise it's them and us. Mm-hmm. And that's simply not God.
But that created a lot of controversy. I mean, a lot of people didn't like that.
And why didn't they? Why do you think they didn't like
that? Well, they're them, the Muslims, and all the, association with terrorism. And, you can find some nice Catholics. And also, another controversy is when certain churches wash the feet of women.
Oh, yeah.
I hate to say, I mean, you know, more general middle-class area, that's controversial. There's a lot of people that are upset about that, that you're supposed to wash men's feet and that's it. I mean, I've heard that.
Oh, yeah, no, I've heard this.
So, like, that's interesting, too.
Women's feet don't need to be washed.
There you go, that's where there's a truth to that.
No, but I mean, that's kind of sad, too, but.
Well, I think that that's why, I think, yes, I certainly was aware that there was, in fact, there was even a time where there was starting to say in certain dioceses, it can only be men.
Right.
In fact, there are certain places, many years ago, in Rome, not that many years ago, in Rome, it could only be priests.
Oh, okay.
See?
Yeah.
So it sort of starts to get, it only. Mm. And at the end of the day, what do you got? You got nothing. You got this sort of like, what? There's nothing left but you. That's pretty lonely, you know? And so what and that's what I think we have to pray about, because it is, there is these sort of pushing. And as you were saying about the women, like this person is a woman. Yeah. Not only she is a Muslim, but she's a Muslim woman, and she's a refugee. What is he saying? What is he, that he's trying to show us what's the heart of the gospel by his own life. Because he is, because Jesus says, I came that they all might have peace, that you might have peace and have it to the full. And that's the only way we're going to have peace. Not when it's you and me, and I'm going to win and you're going to lose. That's what we're doing.
You know what I find scary? I see it happen at such a young age. Like, the high schools are like this now. That, you know, who's going to get into the National Honor Society and who's going to not have a career? It's like, there's such a fear when you're, like, now 13 years old that if you don't make it at a certain point, it's almost like you're doomed for the rest of your... But I see it getting worse. I don't see it getting better.
It is a huge problem.
Yeah.
And it's more in certain areas than others.
Yeah.
I just came from 15 years in Alabama. And all I can say is that particular thing that you're describing is definitely a different reality up here than it is down there.
Yeah.
And I think it really creates, it does create a problem for people. It creates tensions. But I was just reading the other day, I just was doing something for another thing. I think it's 25% of all children, youth between the ages of 13 and 18, suffer from some sort of anxiety disorder here in this country.
I worked at a general high school for 30 years, and what I meant by that is, okay, we all know what you're doing with your honors kids, but what are you doing about the kids underneath them? They had a wonderful program in the industrial arts. And I made it a point to go down when they had their open house. These people, they were building bedroom sets. Sure. And they were learning, and these men went on to be professional carpenters. Isn't that a nice thing to say? I'm a professional carpenter. I can't solve any equation, but I can do this. They taught people a variety of skills. We've got to get back to that. We've got to get back to that. If you have a skill, whatever it is, to develop that skill in your people so that we have a broad range of things. I think we're in a valley right now, but we've got to move toward that. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, I think you're right. I would just say this. I would say that perspective could not be more in keeping with the gospel. I mean, what you just said is exactly what the gospel said. Every person is Habibi. Every person has a gift. Every person has a blessing. And maybe they've had a horrendous life experience that they don't know that they are, or that they have a gift. And then our job as church is to help them. You are, you're great, you're good, you've got this thing to give. Some people can give it, some people can't. But that's the challenge of, as Father was saying, it's all of our challenge as we grow up, to really believe who we are. That's our issue. That's the major issue that we all have in different ways. And So the first thing it creates is this liberated person of peace. And then it also creates, in that same consequence, the liberated heart. And I thought of this, and I thought I had never heard of this quote, we're in the process of trying to help to understand it, sort of, as I mentioned this morning, personally, just understand the role of Joseph in the church today. What is the role of this Joseph in the church today? And Pope Benedict of the 16th, he says, let us allow ourselves to be infected by St. Joseph's silence. We need it greatly in a world that is often too noisy, that does not favor meditation or listening to the voice of God. That's, I think, the gift of one of the gifts of the Benedictine charism to the church, to the world. I think that's why, in this context, the Holy Father Benedict said for the renovation of the church, for the re-evangelization of the church, he took the name Benedict. Because we need to discover on a deeper level who we are. And we can only do that if we're able to take the time to listen, not to what the latest crazy person is saying out here, but it takes, at the end of the day, there has to be a moment when we're quiet in our own, the depths of our own hearts, and say, listening to that still, silent voice, say, you are beautiful in my eyes, and I love you. You're precious. You're mine. And when we hear that voice, when we know that voice is true, the rest is like, as Jesus says, everything else would be given to you besides. Because that's the kingdom. That's the reign of God. So the second thing is this liberated heart. And the third thing is that we therefore then together become a liberated community, a power for good. I saw a new heaven and a new earth, it says in the book of Revelation. How is this new heaven and new earth going to be created? Well, at the end of the day, it has to come through people who know how to love and who are willing to risk loving and love others that people don't want to love, or love those who feel rejected and hated and not cared for, and etc. Somehow or the other, that has to be, it's only in that that God, through us, and that's what the churches were called to be, this community of the Habibi, that then in turn creates a powerful leader. Let me share with you one little thought, and then I'll let you go, relative to the power for good and what God can do through that. As I mentioned to you, this, let's call her Anna. She eventually, after about 4 or 5 months, left here, because she needed to be closer to New York City for different reasons, and so she went to another place, and she has this boyfriend that she had from when she was in Israel, when she was living in Palestine. Her boyfriend is an Israeli Jew whose parents are from Russia. And so he speaks Russian. His mother is actually an Orthodox Christian who, because she's in Israel, had to declare herself a Jew. Because it's the only wow. way she could get a job. And so Anna, she ended up going to live when she had to run for her life, literally, run for her life out of Palestine. She hid in her boyfriend's house with his mom and dad, and they took her in. And then she was able, through UNESCO, or actually through the United Nations, I think it was UNESCO, to escape and then come to the United States as a United Nations refugee. And it was a long, involved story. So that's how she ended up with us, and then boom, boom, boom. But anyway, so her boyfriend, Moishe, finally came from Israel. He'd come once to visit her, and then he came back about a month ago, to marry her. And so they had their wedding. Now, he is an Israeli Jew whose mother is Russian, and he's Russian, his first language is Russian, and whose mother is Christian. Anna is a Muslim from Palestine. They got married in the New York City Hall. The witnesses were Sister Stephanie from Poland and a Catholic priest, me. And the family she's living with and then staying with right now is a Jewish guy from Brooklyn, who's married to a Mormon from Montana.
Wow.
And the sort of the godmother, godfather sort of the whole of Anna is a gentleman who was born in Italy and raised here, but also speaks German. And so his wife is Petra, and Petra's from Germany. So she was there, and Petra's two nieces were visiting straight from Germany, and they're Christians. That was the wedding party.
Wow.
Well, what's the reality of these shows? And we had the wedding at the, I don't know if you've ever had a wedding at the New York City Bird Press. It's really quite a scene.
At where?
At the New York City Hall, where the married people sit. Oh. And it was quite a scene. I thought at one point, I thought they called us up, and you get a number, like in a laundry thing.
Yeah.
And they called you up, and so I went to this. Anna and Moshe and sister, we went up, and like a bank teller window. And they're at the hand, they start to ask them questions, and they're filling the form. So they already had the licenses. So I was like, who's this? I said that the young woman who was attending to us was a Puerto Rican. Are they getting married here? Oh, because we also took with us Father Enrique, who's down in Puerto Rico doing some relief effort, but he's Colombian, and he was the photographer. He's a great photographer. So I said, well, Enrique, you better get over here. This might be the wedding. I don't know. They might get married right here. I don't know. So I said to the Puerto Rican, is this the wedding? Are we getting? We said, oh, no, we're going to go to the chapel. So we went to the baby. We ended up in the chapel. And so anyway, what does that mean? Well, I think at the end of the day, and I have a picture to prove this, by the way, because then they took us, somebody took us to eat at the Pierre, the Hotel Pierre, it was in New York City on Central Park. It was very interesting. The whole thing was very interesting. But so I think at the end of the day, that's what Jesus is saying. That was the good news. That is the good news. You couldn't get a more diverse, crazy, wild, and nutty-looking group than that. I mean, really. But God loves each and every person there with the fullness of the love of God's heart. Does he desire for everyone that they know that? Of course. And once you know, how do you know that? Well, you know it through this good news of Jesus. And once you know that, then life becomes beautiful. It really does. It really becomes beautiful. No matter what's happening, it's beautiful.